Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the former chair of the New York Film Critics Circle and National Society of Film Critics, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films are No Other Choice, The Rip, and Mel Brooks, The 99-Year-Old Man.
I'd like to start off today by talking about a new film by the very major Korean director, South Korean director, Park Chan-wook. He's best known for movies that came out early in the 2000s, his Vengeance trilogy, one part of which was a movie called Old Boy, which was then remade by Spike Lee. Park Chan-wook has been around for quite a while, and he's made a lot of very major films. And his new one is called No Other Choice, and that is a very ironic title, because it's all about people who think they have no other choice or behave like they have no other choice, when actually they're making choices all the time. And it's also a movie that deals very much with some of the problems that we're familiar with in our contemporary economic world. So we have our main character who works at a paper factory. Seems kind of old-fashioned, but people still do make paper, even in this digital age. And he's got a pretty good job there, and he's got a comfortable wife with his wife seems like a nice woman, and they have a son who's a teenager, and they have a younger daughter who is a brilliant cello player. They need music lessons for her because she's got tremendous talent, and everything is just fine. But then some Americans come along and buy this paper factory, and our main character suddenly is out of a job. So he then decides that he's got to find work, and that just means going to some interviews, but every single interview he goes on is just awful. Things are just not designed to allow people to find work in a comfortable and dignified way, at least so it seems in this movie. So he tries to find a job for a while, and he takes a job, and his wife gets a job working as a dental hygienist. But then our main character has a toothache. So whenever something goes right, like his wife getting the job with the dentist, then something goes wrong, like a toothache. And anyway, eventually, our hero, who's an anti-hero, decides that he's just going to have to do something more proactive. And there are people who have jobs, and maybe he could get the jobs if he killed the people who are in the jobs now. So that's what we have. And this is kind of reminds me of, there's a tradition of stories about people who have to kill off or decide to kill off the people who are in line above them for some kind of inheritance. So here it's not an inheritance that's an issue, it's just a job, but he decides he's going to kill some people. So he kills this one guy who is a very, very down on his luck fellow anyway, and he kills another guy who works in a shoe store, and anyway, he goes about trying to get rid of these people so that he can get a job. And of course, as you can tell from what I'm saying here, this movie is a very, very, very dark comedy. Sometimes it actually becomes a sort of a crazy screwball type comedy, and other times it gets very dark, just generally speaking. As the movie goes along, it seems to get darker. So I'm not the first person to point out that the people in this film are making choices all the time, and certainly the main character, his name is Man-soo, certainly he is making choices when he decides to do all these terrible things. And of course, things don't work out the way he wants them to, as they can't possibly do. And by the end of the movie, we realize that everything he's done has been wrong. All the choices he has made have been wrong. And well, things have just gone wrong all over the place for all kinds of people in this movie. It's an interesting movie. I don't find it a great movie. Park Chan-wook is a very interesting filmmaker, and this movie has been, I think, overpraised by a lot of critics who talk about it being, oh, it's all about the economic crises in today's world and how difficult it is to find work. Well, that's true. And it's great to have a movie about this sort of situation, but that doesn't mean it's a great movie. And this certainly is not. That said, it's an interesting movie. I had a pretty good time watching it. And it is about things that are relevant to our culture, our societies around the world today. And so I recommend it, but I can't recommend it with a great deal of enthusiasm. It's a kind of a fun movie in a dark way. It's kind of a relevant movie in sort of obvious ways, but it's a film I think that doesn't quite make it all the way. Again, it's not a great movie, but it's an interesting movie in its way. Next movie I'd like to talk about is very different. It's a very American movie, directed and co-written by Joe Carnahan. And it's a movie with Matt Damon and Ben Affleck. And of course, they've been around for a long, long time. And it's interesting because they got together in college and they started their careers together by writing a movie, Good Will Hunting, and getting Gus Van Sant to direct it. And I don't think it's a terrific movie, but it launched both of their careers. So they set about organizing their careers and getting their careers launched in a very intelligent and effective way. And I've always given them both credit for that. Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, good, talented people. And oh, they are really, really together in this movie where they play a couple of police officers. So the movie is called The Rip. And Matt Damon and Ben Affleck play a couple of narcotics cops. And what happens in the very beginning of the movie is that another narcotics cop is killed in this late, middle of the night, dark of night ambush. But that comes back as the movie goes along, but that turns out not to be the main action of the film. The main action of the film involves a bunch of detectives who have come upon a tremendous stash of drug money during a raid. And it's a very dangerous place where they're in, this house where this money is all being kept, a huge amount of money, more than $20 million, which is a lot of dough. And they figure this money really belongs to the people, probably a cartel, the people who have been running and stashing and profiting off of these illicit drugs. But the thing is that all this is in Florida, it's in Miami. And so the narcotics cops have to count all the money before they leave. So that's interesting because this is a dangerous place. Maybe the cartel is right outside the door. Maybe they're going to get attacked. Maybe machine guns are going to fire all over the place, but they've got to stay in there while they count that money. So that is the basic setup for this movie. And what really keeps the movie going is that it's rare to have a movie with this many twists and turns. We're all accustomed to twists and turns and unexpected developments in movie plots and things like that. But in this case, my golly, just everything is a twist and everything is a turn, especially with our main characters, the guys played by Ben Affleck and Matt Damon, because one of them seems like he's a good guy here, but then the other one seems like he's hiding something. But then maybe he's not really hiding something. Maybe he's really a good guy, and maybe the other one who seemed like he was hiding something was really doing something very clever that's going to somehow help the whole operation along. And all of this is going on, and there's a lot of talking on radios and a lot of saying things so that other people will overhear them and that sort of thing. I found The Rip to be quite a suspenseful film, actually. Had a good time watching it. It's not my favorite kind of movie. The sort of violence-filled police drug drama. But this one really develops a lot of suspense, keeps you sort of on the edge of your seat, and is an interesting movie. So I had a pretty good time watching it. It's very, as they say, well done of its kind. But one other thing that's interesting about The Rip is that Matt Damon has said some very interesting things. He and Affleck were on a podcast, and Matt Damon started expressing his discomfort with the kind of movie that The Rip is in a certain way. Now, The Rip is a Netflix movie, so anybody can pretty well, almost anybody who subscribes to Netflix can watch this movie very easily. It's streaming, it's all over the place, fine. But Matt Damon started to say, very publicly recently, that the way that Netflix movies are made and TV movies are made and streaming movies and cable movies is not really satisfactory. Now, I want to quote a little bit about what Matt Damon said here. He said, "The standard way to make an action movie that we learned was you usually have three set pieces, one in the first act, one in the second, one in the third. You spend most of your money on that one in the third act. That's your finale. And now they're like, can we get a big one in the first 5 minutes? We want people to stay. And it wouldn't be terrible if you reiterated the plot three or four times in the dialogue because people on their phones while they're watching. So that's pretty interesting. And then Ben Affleck joined in and he said, well, hey, you know, not all of the movies that are streaming on video are like that. Some of them are much more subtle and much more interesting than that. But I thought Matt Damon's comments were interesting for a couple of reasons. One, he just made this big Netflix movie, and now he is criticizing the kinds of movies that Netflix makes, basically saying that they're just too easy on the audience, that they're just feeding everything to the audience, repeating the plot and the dialogue in case people miss something, and just generally not demanding that people watching are going to pay any kind of attention. But another reason this interested me is that this is nothing new. For heaven's sakes, it's been going on forever. The great maker of B movies back in the 50s and 60s, Roger Corman, used to say, what matters is the beginning of the movie and the end of the movie. The stuff in the middle doesn't really matter very much. And that's when people generally watch movies in movie theaters. So this kind of thing has been going on forever and ever and ever. And there have always been makers, especially of B movies. And in a way, today's streaming movies are the equivalent of the old Hollywood B movies, the lower budget movies, put a major quickly and cheaply. In a way, these modern streaming movies are the inheritors of that tradition, and these kinds of movies have always just generally felt it doesn't really matter what you do as long as you keep the audience engaged. And the idea of putting a big action thing in the beginning of the movie so the audience will get interested and stay with the film instead of maybe having a lot of boring talk. All that kind of thing goes long, long way back in Hollywood tradition. So there's nothing new about any of this. But I'm glad that somebody who makes a Netflix movie is criticizing a Netflix movie for just being, as one film scholar once put it, an overly obvious kind of medium. Hollywood film has always been overly obvious. And Netflix movies tend to be overly obvious. And it's just interesting to have somebody who's really in the middle of the industry like Matt Damon criticizing this kind of thing and calling it to task a little bit. That said, I'll repeat, The Rip is a pretty good movie. I had a good time watching it. And hey, movies have always followed formulas, and that's just part of the game. I prefer it when movies don't follow formulas and take me by surprise, but at least The Rip follows its formulas in a pretty entertaining way, and that's something to welcome. And lastly today, I'd like to talk about a documentary, a very long documentary. It's in two parts, and it also is streaming. Mel Brooks, the 99-year-old man. Mel Brooks is one of the great comics of the silver screen. He's not one of my favorites. In fact, I don't really much like any Mel Brooks movie. I've always found them crude and, again, over-obvious and just over the top in too many ways. People in Mel Brooks movies are always shouting. And in this documentary about Mel Brooks movies, people are always shouting. So just too much noise for me, generally speaking. That said, though, Mel Brooks has established himself as a major force in American entertainment and in world entertainment. And I certainly have to give him credit for that. He has written and directed and starred in an enormous amount of movies, many, many of which are themselves about movies, films that are satires of different genres, like Blazing Saddles, a satire of the Western, Silent Movie, a satire of silent movies, Young Frankenstein, a satire of the Frankenstein horror movies, etc., etc. So that's been a sort of a specialty of his. High Anxiety, which is one of his best films, a satire of Alfred Hitchcock movies, and all that kind of thing. Mel Brooks, in his way, is an interesting filmmaker, even though I don't especially like many of his movies, if any. It's called Mel Brooks, the 99-year-old man, because one of his famous comic shticks is a thing that he did with the other very great comic, Carl Reiner, for many years. They had this comedy series going where they would do dialogues. They would just talk and they would improvise it. They would make it up as they went along, where Mel Brooks was playing the 2,000-year-old man and Carl Reiner would be the person interviewing him, and all kinds of comic stuff would come out of that. Again, I've never found that stuff all that funny, but it's been popular over the years. years. So that's the 2,000-year-old man. Mel Brooks in real life is 99 years old, which is also very impressive, by the way. So that's why this movie is called Mel Brooks, the 99-year-old man, with an exclamation point. And he certainly has been around for a long time. So what this documentary does is it goes through Mel Brooks's whole career, and he is on camera a whole lot of the time. Carl Reiner is on camera quite a lot. And then there's either new footage or archive footage of all kinds of other people they worked with, who are many, many of them very familiar names to me. Gene Wilder, Sid Caesar, Larry Gelbart, Dinah Shore, Ben Stiller, Judd Apatow, who is co-director of this movie. And they all talk about Mel Brooks's movies, and they celebrate Mel Brooks's movies. This is not a movie of film criticism. Nobody is really delving into this stuff, going to deep, separating the good from the bad. This is basically a very, very long, it's more than 4 hours long, it's in two parts, very, very long celebration of Mel Brooks's movies. So I found it all entertaining to watch. In fact, I enjoyed a lot of this more than I enjoy Mel Brooks's actual movies. Also, by the way, archival footage, Mel Brooks's very high-class wife, Anne Bancroft, herself a wonderful actor, and in my opinion, a lot of the stuff she's done over the years really outranks a whole lot of the stuff her husband Mel Brooks has done over the years. So anyway, if you want to celebrate Mel Brooks, if you want to think about movie comedy for a while, Mel Brooks, the 99-year-old man is the movie for you. I had a pretty good time watching it. Again, a better time than I actually have watching a whole lot of Mel Brooks's own actual movies. So that is my partly documentary, partly fictional story this week.
For which we thank you as ever and always, David Sterrett, Films in Focus, the films No Other Choice, The Rip, and Mel Brooks, the 99-year-old man.
Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.